How did Jesus relate to the military? Last month we were remembering the First and Second World War and all the conflicts that have happened in between and are still going on. And what I wanted to do at the last service was focus on Jesus and his attitude to the military. What was his relationship to them? Since Israel at the time was an occupied country by the Roman army. Well, we've heard this morning there are two accounts in the New Testament of this story of the centurion who came to Jesus for help, one in Matthew and the other in Luke. Matthew says that the centurion came in person, whereas Luke says that he asked a group of Jewish elders if they would go and ask Jesus to come and heal his servant. Matthew says that the servant was a boy. That's what the Greek word implies, that he was a boy. And Luke says that he was a servant, or more correctly, a slave. So he was a slave boy. Matthew says that this slave was paralyzed and he was in terrible suffering. And Luke says that he was sick and about to die. Why all the differences? We shouldn't be surprised that there are differences in the stories in the Gospels, because remember, these were just memories that people kept with them over the years, and it's only many, many years later that the memories that people had were written down, and so we should expect there to be differences there. What about the centurion? What about the post of centurion, the rank of centurion in the Roman army? Well, he would have been an officer in the occupying forces. Imagine what the Afghans thought about being occupied by Americans, Brits, and other forces. I can't remember the last time we were occupied. When have we ever been occupied? Imagine what it would be like. A centurion, he was a long-serving regular soldier commanding 100 men, hence the name centurion, and he would have been responsible for discipline in the regiment. A contemporary writer says, centurions must be men who command, steady in action and reliable. When hard pressed, they must be ready to hold their ground and die at their posts. That chap was called Polybius or Polybius, whatever. This particular Roman officer, what about him? Well, he was held, we are told, in high regard by the Jewish people. I find that astonishing. A member of the occupying forces, and the locals actually thought quite a lot of him. He had financed the building of a synagogue, which begs the question, was he a worshipper of the God of the Jews, of the one true God? If he was, how would that affect his duties, his ceremonial duties and the obligations to the Roman gods? Because, all of life for the Romans was related to the Roman gods. They would feature in, ceremonial of various kinds. So how did he sort that out if he was a worshipper of the one true God? I'm being a bit cynical here. What were the reasons why he financed a synagogue for the Jews? Was that to sort of keep the locals happy, or was it a genuine mark of affection and regard that he had for the Jewish people? Well, the elders who came to Jesus seemed to imply that he loved the nation. He did regard the Jewish people with favor, and hence his kindness in building a synagogue. This Roman soldier had a slave boy who was ill, and he valued him highly. So another question, why was he so highly valued, this slave boy? Was it because he was a favorite of the centurion's wife? Was it because he was a boy? Was it because he was particularly good at the duties that he performed? What's also interesting is that all of the mentions in the New Testament of centurions are favorable. Can you think of any? There's the one of the centurion at the cross when Jesus was crucified. And when Jesus died, the centurion is said to have uttered the words, "Truly, this was a son of God, or a son of God, or truly this was a righteous man. Then you've got the centurion who was the first convert, the first Gentile convert to Christianity in Acts 10, Cornelius. And then you've got the centurion who rescued Paul from the mob. You remember he came to Jerusalem towards the end of Acts, this is, and the mob set upon him, and a centurion actually rescued him and saved him from being assassinated. And then there's the Roman officer who accompanied Paul on his final journey to Rome and showed him great kindness. So I find that interesting that all of the mention of the enemy actually were favourable mentions. About this slave boy again. In the Roman world, a slave had no rights whatever, none. Aristotle, the Greek philosopher, says a slave was a living tool. The only difference between a slave, a beast of burden, and a tool was that the slave could speak. And he also went on to say there are two classes in humanity, masters and slaves. So in a word, a master could do as he pleased with his slave. He had the power of life and death over this human being. Well, this centurion heard about this Jewish teacher performing miracles, and he sends a delegation to Jesus to plead for him to come and heal his servant. And the boy is clearly in a bad way, because the Jewish elders, they say, you know, I mean, this man, I mean, he's worthy of your coming to heal his boy. He built us a synagogue. Please, you must come. And Jesus says, well, I like to think he said, no problem, I'll come. Well, actually, there was a problem, wasn't there? Because it was illegal, it was set in law that a Jew could not enter the house of a Gentile. If he did, they became unclean. I find it astonishing that one could regard a race of people as unclean. But then you see, Jewish religion was all about ritual purity. I mean, they were obsessed with being clean. You couldn't do your religious obligations without going through religious ritual. So to step into an unclean area was a disaster for any Jew. And I think this is the reason why the two religious types passed by on the other side. You remember the story of the Good Samaritan? And we often think that the Levite and the priest passed by on the other side because they were just being selfish. But in fact, if they had touched this man, this injured person in the street, they would have immediately become unclean. And for religious types, that was unthinkable. It would have, you know, voided all religious duties as far as they were concerned. Anyway, back to our Gentile here. So Jesus could not have entered this man's house. So there is a problem. Well, he comes to Jesus. And in Matthew's version, it says that the centurion came in person, and Jesus says, am I to come and heal him? Now, that's not in the English of Matthew's Gospel, but William Barclay, the New Testament scholar, he suggests that it's possible to turn it into the form of a question. Not I will come and heal him, but shall I come and heal him? So in other words, Jesus puts the onus on the centurion to reply. And it's at this point that we see the strength of the centurion's faith. He knows that Jews are not permitted to enter Gentile houses, and yet he believes that the word of Jesus was enough to heal his servant. Because for this military type, the issue is about authority. He believed that Jesus had power over sickness, just as he, the centurion, had power over men. And so the centurion's response to Jesus is, just say the word. That's all you need to do. You don't need to come, just say the word. And what Jesus does is he commends this outsider, this unclean Gentile, for astonishing faith. And I like to think, when you read the stories of Jesus, use your imagination if you've got one. Kathleen says she doesn't have one, I don't believe that. Put yourself in the place of this centurion. You go home, having said to Jesus, just say the word, and Jesus tells him to go. And you get to the gate of your compound, and the gate opens, and there, standing in the gateway, is a very healthy slave boy. And the centurion is just so overjoyed, he grabs the boy's hand, and they run shouting and laughing and crying down the street to Jesus to say, thank you, oh, thank you so much. I like to believe that might have happened. I don't know. But he was healed, we are told. But there's a sad part to the story. And the sad part is in Matthew's version. Remember, Matthew's gospel was written for a Jewish audience. There's lots of Jewish references, Old Testament references in Matthew's gospel. And the sad, and we get the sad bit of the story in Matthew's gospel, because Jesus, when the centurion leaves, having said, just say the word, he turns to the Jews behind him and says, do you know, I'm amazed. I'm gobsmacked. I've never come across faith like this Gentile's faith in all of Israel. The insiders don't have faith. The outsiders do. And Jesus is astonished. And remember, Jesus always addresses the Jewish, his Jewish audience in terms that they understand. And the Jews believe that when Messiah, the great deliverer, returned to free them from their oppressors, they believed that there would be a great banquet. And all the Jews would sit down at this messianic kingdom banquet and feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, their great patriarchs. What never crossed their mind would be that any Gentile would actually sit down with them and participate. I mean, they were outsiders. They were beyond the pale. They would never participate in this feast. And here is Jesus saying, actually, they will. They will come from east and west. He said, the love of God is international in its scope. I would love to have been there to see Jews listening to this stuff that they could not possibly imagine to happen. God's love, Jesus is saying, is not for the favored few. It's not for the elect. It's not for the chosen race. God's love is worldwide in its scope. And it's all about a simple step of faith. Follow me. That's all. And this centurion had that kind of faith. Just say the word. The poet John Whittier writes these words, and you know them so well. In simple trust like theirs who heard beside the Syrian sea the gracious calling of the Lord, let us, like them, without a word, rise up and follow thee. It's not about reciting a creed. It's not about believing all the, you know, all of the doctrines that clutter the church. You know, it worries me so much that Christians down the centuries have just fought against each other and killed one another because one person didn't believe this doctrine and this person didn't believe. It's just astonishing that we have changed this simple follow me into such a complicated issue. Just say the word, Lord. I am not worthy, not fit to have you under my roof. Just say the word, Lord. I am a foreigner, don't fit the mold, don't speak the right language. Just say the word, Lord. You'll get a reputation if you cross my threshold. Just say the word, Lord. I built them a synagogue. Is that enough to favor me? Just say the word, Lord. Your word is enough to heal my boy. Just say the word, Lord. They tell me your word has power. Sickness dies at your command. Just say the word, Lord. Authority is something that you and I have in common. Would you, a Jew, grant my request? Just say the word.